Hey everybody, Ferran Wozniak, host of the IASIS podcast. I'm here with the legendary Jim Dibble, Spokane, Washington. Jim, how you doing? It's morning for you. It's afternoon for me. How you doing this morning slash afternoon?
It's pretty good. Good to be here with you, Woz.
Absolutely. Longtime guest coming. I know you, I call you the godfather of digital forensics, but it's you know, obviously because I've known you for now probably 4 years and stuff like that. I know what you bring to the table. You have a great history in law enforcement, IASIS, digital forensics. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself. The, you know, Jim Dibble, rookie police officer to Cellebrite, but classroom technology manager, correct-ish? What's your title at Cellebrite now?
Yep.
Go ahead and just run us through the spectrum, the history of Jim Dibble.
That's been a long and winding road, as the Beatles once said. I started out my career probably at the turn of the century, which sounds kind of appropriate for me. Around 2000, I really started taking an interest in forensics, which kind of put me on a different spectrum, if you will. I was actually joined the Army in 1969 when I was 17, ended up in Vietnam between 18 and 19, came back, was with the 4th Infantry Division in Vietnam, decided, well, there wasn't a whole lot of future in that. So got back and, changed my, occupation specialty, to military police.
Okay.
Was in there for a while. And then finally, transitioned over to the Criminal Investigations Command and became a CID agent for about 15 years, and then retired in 1992 as a chief warrant officer from the Army. Came back to Washington State to be near my parents, who are living in Chehalis on the west side of the state. Got kind of an interesting announcement for a job as a program manager with the Washington State Gambling Commission. So I joined them in 1994 in January and spent the next 23 years living in Spokane, working as a commissioned special agent with the state. During that time, I had to go back through Washington State Basic Law Enforcement Academy here. Did that in Spokane, and when I get out, I kind of liked keeping in touch with Spokane Police Department. So I worked, not all, even though I was fully commissioned with the state already, I went ahead and joined Spokane Police Department as a reserve and was with them as a reserve officer for about 15 years until finally just got too busy, had to get out of a car and spend more time in the office. Mm-hmm. But stayed with Washington State for about 23 years. The last probably 12 years is when I started my transition into the forensic side of the house. Kind of got away from traditional police work, decided that I really did like computer forensics. And at the time, everything was kind of split out between computer forensics, mobile forensics, audio, video. Started some NW3C training.
Absolutely.
Took the BDRA and IDRA and classes like that. Really kind of whet my appetite for getting into forensics and ended up kind of building a forensic laboratory here in Spokane from scratch. And then replicated that over in Olympia at our headquarters and was a fully functional forensic lab. We're probably the only gambling commission in the world that had complete opportunity to work with all kinds of machines. And I became very popular amongst the local PDs, both on this side of the state and also over on the west side, specifically Lewis County, just south of Olympia, Tacoma. They had no forensic support, so I actually started doing all of their forensics for them. But yeah, I did that for about 23 years, and then
Wow.
2016, got a buddy Tidwell, good friend of mine, contacted me and kind of made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and it was time to get away from commission work at that point. So I transitioned over to the corporate world and started yet a new career, and that's where I am right now.
How I know I've been to Washington, and also I call it Spokane, Washington. I apologize for my hybrid Western New York slash Southern accent. So Spokane is how it's properly pronounced.
Exactly.
We learn something new every day with every episode of this podcast. I know I used to call it Oregon, or it's Oregon, and it's not Nevada, it's Nevada. So when I talk to people, I know the. All right, so Spokane. I know Washington. I was there in an NWC3 training there actually in probably 2010. And you guys, Washington State has the pull tabs, right? You go to the bar or something like that, and you get the little, like, you buy penny pull tabs or something like that, correct? Was that
Oh,
part of
yeah.
the, yeah.
No, that's actually it. It's interesting, the state of Washington, all gambling is set aside. Washington always intended that gambling would be for social pastime, not for commercial like you would see in Nevada. So, for example, raffles are set aside for nonprofit organizations
Okay.
only. But in the bars, they have punch boards are kind of an older kind of a concept, but pull tabs are still very popular there. But then some time ago, card rooms really started to proliferate a lot, and they went from 5 tables up to 15. And now they have a lot of what we call casinos around the state. However, they're not quite as wide open as the kind of gambling you would see in Vegas.
Okay.
You also see a lot of slot machines in the state. They look like slot machines, but instead of having random number generators on them, they essentially it's a closed set. So, for example, if you implemented a game in a casino and there was a set like of 50,000 tickets or whatever, every time you pull the arm on what looks like a slot machine, it actually will display one of those results and cancel that ticket out. So it's not quite as open-ended as you would get with a traditional slot machine. But yeah, that was pretty interesting, enforcing gambling laws in the state. But what really kind of drove my train there was getting into a lab and working on the physical side of devices and helping out the local law
Yeah.
enforcement.
Nice. With that, obviously you have a history with IASIS. Can you tell us your beginning days? I know you're a former president of IASIS, correct? Yeah, and then I know you act as a liaison between the corporate world and IASIS now, which we'll touch on later. But tell us your IASIS history, if you don't mind.
Essentially, like I said, I came to computer forensics in about 2000. Well, I finally ended up at IASIS about 2004. Went through the BCFE course,
Okay.
and then the following, continued on through the CFCE process. Was certified in 2005, and between 2006, 2010, I actually became a certification coach and kind of did my time working with others trying to obtain the COCE. 2007, 2008, around that time, I actually was working on our R&D team as a subcommittee member.
Research and development. Yeah.
And about the same time, 2007 to 10, I took over as chairman of the Problem Development Subcommittee. So I was working on developing new testing materials. 2010, 2011, chairman of the CFC certification subcommittee. About 2011, I was elected to the board of directors. And between 11 and 12, I served as the director of certification. 2012 to 13, vice president of the board. And then from 2013 to 2019, I served as president. And finally, things got way too busy for me. I had to kind of step back a little bit. But
Yeah,
about a decade working with IASIS, with the board of directors in various different positions. But
I can imagine it's grueling. I'm simply just the podcast host. I'm a part of the marketing team, but podcast host is my actual, I guess, real title. And this takes a lot for me. And as you know, we were scheduled yesterday, and I had my day job. Mm-hmm. Our day jobs get in the way. So I could only imagine being on a board, being on committees. I taught mobile forensics for 2 years, and that's the amount of time us as volunteers do. It's a full time job on top of your mm-hmm. full time job. It really is.
Right.
So I could only imagine being on the board, the amount of phone calls, meetings, and everything else, because we're nonprofit. We're a volunteer organization, but also we're run as a corporation. We have every aspect of a corporation. Would you agree with that? Correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I continually had to kind of not only remind myself of, but my fellow volunteers in the board was, at the end of the day, we're a business. It's a nonprofit business, but it has to remain solvent. You have to be very disciplined, especially as a nonprofit, as to earning an income. And what's that balance between how much is enough, how much is not enough, as opposed to how can we make sure that we're meeting our stated purpose, which is furthering the entire field of forensics around the world. And you're not only concerned about here in North America. I mean, we have a lot of our practitioners, but it's an international organization.
It is.
And it represents people all over the world. So we constantly had to be thinking from a worldview.
Yep.
What does IASIS mean, not only to people in the U.S., because we have kind of a picture of how things should be, but things are not always the same when you get over to Europe or Asia, Latin America, or other parts. So it was always interesting me, the interactions between our volunteers and the board. Volunteers very much were integral to keeping the board, I think, transparent and honest, if you will, as far as what are we doing? Where are we going? And why are we doing it?
Yep.
So I always loved that part of being on the board, knowing that you are completely 100% answerable to all of your clients. In this case, it's all of our members. And even more so, the other volunteers that step up to take on some of these monumental tasks that you can imagine has to take place for an organization like IASIS to have succeeded for so many years.
Yes.
As a 100% volunteer organization.
Yep. Yeah. And it shows, because you talked about the global scale. You know, we have our presence in Europe this, I guess, fall or autumn for us. We're in Australia. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, Darren Freestone, the chairman of the board, he is in, he's in Australia, Aussie, I guess you could say. I think I could say that. I'll the next podcast is going to be with him. And then I have our member from Fiji, we have an IASIS member from Fiji. They will be a guest on the show coming up. So you see it is a global organization, and to keep up with the times, although I think IASIS only has one paid employee.
Debbie.
Well, I want to say she cooks the books, but she runs the books. Yeah.
Oh, Debbie,
Aaron
Debbie
Raleigh
is,
cooks the books.
right. Yeah, it's funny to be a little known fact here was that well, I really encouraged Aaron Raleigh to join IASIS many years ago because he lives here in Spokane with
yep.
me,
mm-hmm.
With Spokane Police Department, and for a long time now I've been kind of pushing him like, you need to join IASIS, and finally it was fun to see him get connected, and now he's on the board of directors and he's really involved. But getting back to Debbie, yeah, I've known Debbie for many years. Reluctantly, she's one of the few. I'm one of the few people that get to hug her, but she still grimaces. But that's just Debbie. I love her like a sister. She has a heart of gold. She has a low tolerance for, I think, for people who don't think.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
she has a great heart, and you never have to guess where Debbie stands on
that
things.
That is true. That is true.
And and I can appreciate that.
I'm just happy when she smiles at me and says hello. I take that as a win for the day.
It is.
Speaking of IASIS, obviously the annual Orlando event happened. And as I mentioned in the intros, I know you work for Celebrite, and I know you have dual roles for this conference. I know you helped me out with dongles and licenses back when I was teaching mobile, but a quick recap of the Orlando event from your point of view. I talked to Mark Baker. I talked to a few people. I know it was smooth as silk, but from your point of view, how did it go this year for you, for everybody?
Yes,
for the event?
It's funny you say smooth as silk, and I always used to look at that. It was I think Scott Matsudaira was the first one who ever said, "Yeah, it's like a duck on a pond."
yes, it is.
Above the water, it looks nice and smooth, but underneath, those feet are paddling as fast as they can. But that's the life of IASIS. It takes year-round preparation to actually have this event go off without a hitch. And it's interesting was because at some point, it's like we used to say the train's left the station, because you build it, you lay the tracks, you build the train, you make sure everything's functioning, but at some point you just have to let it go.
Yep.
And it does what trains do.
It's supposed to do.
And for this one, my role has changed a bit. A couple of years ago, in fact, back when Buddy was with Celebrite, essentially he and Brendan Morgan got together and they decided, that there probably was appropriate that I would be like a Celebrite liaison to IASIS, since I had such a history here. And it made absolute sense because I know everybody. I know how the system works.
Yes.
I used to put a lot of time and effort into putting on the annual training events down in Orlando, wherever it was being held. And my job changed a little bit. So I started looking toward, first of all, being a representative vendor at the conference, trying to make sure that our vendor staff, be it solutions engineers or our training and management specialists, had everything they needed, but then also trying to ensure that when we have our vendor night and we have an opportunity to present Celebrite products to the students that are attending there, that it went off without a hitch. And along with that meant trying to have a hospitality suite where we could talk maybe a little bit more one-on-one on people that we hadn't seen all year. Make sure that their needs are being met. At the end of the day was also trying to get as many products giveaways as I possibly could by twisting arms or convincing others that, like this past year, I was like, listen, we have 325 students, practitioners, they will be after they pass the CFCE, if they're not already doing it, that they're going to need tools.
Yes.
It's like, this is the perfect opportunity to not only give back to the forensic community, but also introduce some of our Cellebrite tools that might be helpful for them in their endeavors. So trying to coordinate all those things and making sure that, in addition to that, I want to be in a classroom. Like this past year, I taught our CCO and CCPA class the first week as part of advanced training. But the second week, yeah, I was back in a classroom as a row coach, contributing back to IASIS because that's what really kind of brings me back after all these years is giving back to the students on a very personal level. So if you put it all together, it is a full-time job.
It
I
is.
mean, you've got to maintain your own job, but then making sure that IASIS is tended to in an
Yes.
appropriate manner, and then also making sure that it's done in a very professional manner.
Of course.
Okay,
Yes.
because at the end of the day, I have to remember, yeah, who's giving my paycheck now? Even though what really drives me is watching the light come on in students as they're starting to learn some of these forensic concepts that they desperately need to know before they go out
Yeah.
and back to their jobs.
You mentioned Bedra and Idra earlier with the with NWC3. I think they consolidated those classes. It's another acronym or letters now, but it's and that was the both of those classes, that was drinking from a fire hose. And I know BCFE is exact same way. And also, but you're in a classroom with, like you said, 325 people in the big room, as we call it. I mean, that is, it's outstanding. The production level is Beyonce concert level production with the sound, with the lighting, with the big screens and everything like that. I mean, it's like watching, if you're watching a nature show, it's like watching ants work. How we build everything up, and it's not just the big room, but also the auxiliary classrooms with all the other classes that we have. But the way it's built up, and they have it on time lapse camera, so it happens real quick within a minute, and then you have the whole 2 weeks, and then everything just breaks down. It's incredible how, as a collective, everybody works. I mean, that's the most amazing part for me, is how it's a hive mentality. It really is for the whole thing. It's pretty awesome. But we could talk about IASIS all day. I try not to have too much of an infomercial for the organization. Obviously, we have to plug it as much as possible. But I want to get into some content. Jim, you and I, we talked offline, or we talked in pre-production. Let's talk about Internet Crimes Against Children Investigations, ICAC. I've been doing it. I did it, I would say, hardcore for 15 years of my career, both on the investigative side and the digital forensics examiner side. Okay, I've run both gamuts. I kind of weaned myself off of it in my later years of my career. I'll call it mental health reasons, call it whatever. We have new people in the office. I pass the baton on to them with that. I know you have a history with ICAC. Let's I we could go all day talking about ICAC. I know your colleague, our friend, and also fellow IASIS volunteer, Paige McBeth, your neighbor from just south of you, he gave a great talk at Techno Security Conference on the wears and tears of being a career ICAC investigator. And he had great points. If you ever see Paige McBeth and he's giving a presentation on ICAC, I please go see it. But let's talk about that. I mean, it's a grueling business, I started it when, heck, 2005 is when I started doing ICAC investigations. We had computers, or maybe 25, maybe 50 gigabytes worth of space. peer-to-peer was maybe LimeWire at the time, you know, and then you know, obviously now with BitTorrent and stuff like that, and then else, you know, you want to talk about the dark web and stuff like that. It's obviously exponentially increased, but it's how did you deal with it after all these years or all those years of working ICAC? Did you just?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, I'm afraid I probably did things the wrong way, because, you know, coming out of a retired military and then going through, you know, law enforcement training, probably like most people, I go in and I think, well, no, I can handle this. It's just,
right.
It's all psychological.
Right.
I can deal with all of this. And, but I'll tell you, I got involved with Washington State ICAC as a member right after I opened up a lab here in Spokane. And the things that ICAC members are exposed to, I think they're totally unprepared for. Just the depraved nature of what you have to deal with changes a person, not only psychologically, but emotionally, even physically at some points. But what really used to cause me the most concern was the thought that there might be a locally identifiable victim that I hadn't spent enough time trying to identify. Those are the things that kept me up at night and really caused me a lot of concern. And I have to tell you that thanks to doggedness on my part, I think, or not wanting to let that bone go, right? Mm-hmm. Like a dog with a bone.
Yep.
It's like I was able to actually identify victims not only here, but in Stevens County, just north of Spokane, which really at the end of the day made me feel like that's what it was all about, was making a difference in this world, for positive difference.
Yep.
But I got to tell you, I would be dishonest if I didn't tell you that it didn't change who I was.
Sure.
I think I shared with you once before that, just as an idea, kind of like a testimony to that, was my wife and I had adopted our two youngest daughters from China. My youngest, Addie, we adopted when she was 8 months old. And Janie, her sister, we adopted when she was 5 years old. But the youngest we adopted first. And I can remember coming home and bringing her back to the house. And Sydney, my wife, was in giving her a bath and got distracted, had to go do something, and asked me if I could watch Addie while she was in the bath. And I remember walking into the room, and it just hit me. And I said, I just yelled at Cindy, and I said, I can't do this. I can't do this. This is just, I'm sorry, too much comes flooding into my head. But it was then it really struck me that the innocence, I think, even between a father and their kids can be destroyed by working in this environment. And I started to wonder what else is being destroyed? I mean, within a person, and how important it is to be able to maybe talk to somebody or work out some of these issues, because we have officers like yourself that have been working in this field for many, many years. And I'm just afraid of kind of what's happening underneath our hoods as far as how it's changing us.
Yeah.
And things have not gotten better. Things have gotten worse. I think with the advancements in technology and different ways that we're now able to communicate and capture media, the existence of this information is, you know, even worse than it used to be. So, yeah, it was tough. At some point, I think everybody has to kind of like decide when it's time to get out.
Yeah.
And I know many times people would come up and say, well, thank you for what you're doing. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I appreciate people thanking me for working those kind of difficult cases, and somebody has to.
Right.
But it takes the right kind of person, I think, to be able to do that. But anyway, it's one of the reasons why even today, I've been going to like Northwest ICAC up in Redmond,
Yep.
Microsoft campus. I go up
Yes,
there
yes.
every
Yep.
year. I started with them, the first one up there. As a matter of fact, I'll be there again this year giving training. Last The week before last, I was in Atlanta for the Northwest, I mean the National Law Enforcement Training Conference on Child Exploitation. Provided 2 days of training up there for Cellebrite for free, because I really like to get some of our tools in the hands of those, not only the practitioners, but also like the legal side, the jurists, like prosecutors, some of the different AGs, whoever can come to training so they learn a little bit more about what the investigators are dealing with. Our examiners and how to use these tools to maximize like prosecutions whenever they can, but also to help to find victims.
Yeah, it's and they need it, and it's crucial. You know, obviously I deal with it, anybody in our I always equate it to Law and Order. The first half hour is the police side, the second half hour is the prosecution side, the TV show Law and Order. But it's paramount that the prosecution is, they don't have to be as well versed in our craft as we are, but they have to have an understanding of what it is we do. And I know there's training for prosecutors out there, and a lot of them are proactive. And obviously, with time and technology, more and more of them are having it in their training. But you mentioned the physical effects or the mental effects on an ICAC investigation. And then you talked about how you were immune to it and you could handle it and stuff like that. And I was always like that. Always. I was like, well, somebody's got to do it. I don't want to work. I can't do anything with animal abuse, elder abuse, anything like that. That's not my ticket. I was like, but I could handle this job. But the thing that did it for me was, and we were still wearing masks, so probably it was COVID, so it was probably late 2020. I had to present my CSAM case to a grand jury, and it was in December. I know the date. It was December 17th, 2020, actually, and it was their last grand jury session for the year. So they're gonna have their Christmas party. They had a, what we call in South Carolina, a pig picking, which pretty much means you're having a barbecue. And I was the one to present right before their lunch, and I presented my case. I kept everything above board, I guess you could say. But then a couple of the grand jury members started asking me questions. Well, they asked questions, they opened up Pandora's box, and I had to explain to them the details of the case. I left that room totally fine. They were decimated. They crying, heads in their hands. I actually ruined their Christmas party that they were going to have right after I left. And I remember I called my wife and I said, "Hey, do you want Wendy's? I could go for a Dave single combo. Do you want?" And she's like, "Yeah, pick me up something like that." And I was a couple hours away from home, but I was like, "All right, I'll pick us up Wendy's for lunch or whatever." And then I thought to myself, I was like, I just left the room with people crying and people were absolutely devastated, and I was totally okay. I was totally normal. And that's when it hit me, like, this isn't, I'm not normal, you know? So I that's when it hit me, like, I gotta get out of this business. I have to slowly just pass the torch to somebody else. And my agency, proactive, we go see I want to say a therapist. We have the opportunity to talk to a licensed practitioner twice a year, just to clear the head, I guess you could say. And it's, obviously, So that's a good thing. But yeah, that moment for me in 2020, I was like, no, I'm at the twilight of my career. I'm winding down. I have to get out of this. So I can still be a mentor. I can still do the forensic examinations, but when you actually do the investigation in an ICAT case, you don't know it. You don't know it, but it's like a cup of water. You know, all it does is, you know, you can fill that cup to the brim, but one single drop of something is going to cause that cup to overflow, you know, and I wanted to stop before that cup overflowed. Luckily with my agency's proactiveness with helping us with that, there used to be a stigma to it. I know when I first started, if you couldn't handle it, they just would transfer you and you're like, oh, he can't handle the job. Obviously now, you know, 20 years later, it's a lot more, the mental health game has really stepped up in agencies. And I think that's great. There's no shame in it. There's no stigma in it. Cause it is a tough job. And I think that's something that, it's needed for ICAC investigators. And I think somebody starting off in it, they're going to think they're hard. They're going to think they're too cool for school. I can handle it. This, well, trust me, you know, behind the scenes, you know, the man behind the curtain, it builds up. So,
yep. Yeah, it's interesting. I was just going to share with you that when I first got heavily involved into police work, back with the Army, I was dealing with a lot of homicides, suicides, things like that. And there's this phenomenon called isolation of effect, which it was funny because the first time I ever heard somebody use that term to explain how we deal with trauma when we're working in law enforcement. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. If we go to a very traumatic incident and we're almost like we're outside of ourselves watching what's happening, It's not actually our reality. And that becomes, in a lot of cases, our protective mechanism for us that keeps us from getting too involved. But the thing is, it's like over the years, I found that there are very few things that will break through that paradigm, that isolation of effect, and anything involving children is one of them, to where it devastated me. If I went to like a SIDS death, sudden infant death syndrome, or something where children were the victims of, let's say, a horrific motor vehicle collision or something like that, I always felt, because you have kids, it breaks down that barrier you have and really affects you, starts to bother you. And I think going into ICAC, as much as we try to shield ourselves, it changes you. And what you described there was actually the part where that's your wake-up call. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute, I just went through this and I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's like, I expect it. And when I find it, nothing's new. And there's a problem with how I'm looking at the world now.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, sometimes I have to tell people, listen, I'm a product of Vietnam at 18, 20 years in the Army, 23 years as a commissioned officer, working ICAC. It's like, it's no wonder my filter is not completely jaded at
Correct.
This point.
Correct.
But I thank the Lord for like getting me through a lot of things. And it's like, guys, take care of yourselves. We're not so tough that these things don't affect us. And thank goodness that I think departments now have taken away the stigma of seeking some kind of help, emotional help, to try to help you like deal with the baggage that comes with this. And by the way, I want to say this earlier. I'm going to correct you on one thing. Anytime you get to listen to Paige McBeth talk about anything, you should go watch him. I've known Paige for years. I absolutely love him to death. He's a great gentleman. I get a chance to work with him too, because he, working for Cellebrite. So I get to see him not only at the forensic affairs, but also he's a colleague here, so good stuff.
Yeah, he is. He's I when he gave his talk, I it was not a cops only room, so he I could tell he wanted to, you know how we talk, especially ICAC investigators. Our sense of humor is I
Sick.
what when I've learned over time to calibrate it, but at parties I'll go to, parties with my wife, and my sense of humor sometimes does not go as it does in the squad room or, behind closed doors. Obviously, we're behind all frosted glass and closed doors, and it's I've learned to, it's I've learned to adapt to how normal humans, I guess you could say, talk in civility, at holiday parties. But I could tell Paige was holding that back because it was open to everybody, not just law enforcement. So he did a great job. Paige, you did a great job. But well, one thing I also want to touch on, and I got a plug, Kristen Searing, she's an IASIS member. She works out of the St. Louis area. I had her on a guest last year. It was actually the biggest hit for 2023 for the IASIS podcast. Her unit, they do equine therapy. They'll spend, they'll go to a farm and, hang out with horses and farm animals from time to time. All mental health, all mental health. That's a great program that they have there. That just to unwind and, if you don't like horses, it's probably very traumatizing to you. But I mean, if you, but yeah, why not? Feed some chickens, pet some pigs, and brush some horses. So that's a great program they have in her area, and I think we're going to see more and more and more of that coming up. I mean, because it is an issue. Obviously, you with I don't have a I can't touch you with Vietnam, 20 years in the army and all that good stuff. But it's just I think we were in our infant stage with ICAC, and now that everybody is now finally, getting of age and retiring, and there's been studies done, there's trends and stuff like that. So everybody, agencies, organizations, they're saying that, like, we gotta take care of these people. They're doing a crucial job, So, but all right, now that we brought down the room, Jim, let's talk fun. You're in Spokane, Washington. That is obviously, I would assume you have nature. I assume you have trees, ponds, lakes, everything. Let's talk. I'm about to go on a fly fishing trip with my brothers. So you fish? You enjoy fishing?
Yeah, I do. I love the there are actually more lakes in eastern Washington than there is on the west side of the state, which is
Wow.
kind of nice. We have a lot of for those who like to fly fish, some of the best fly fishing in the world between here, Idaho, Montana, up in those areas. But my real passion is every year I kind of plan, and it's kind of like my health and wellness visit. I go up to Ketchikan, and I'll go up there for about a week and halibut and salmon fish.
Nice. Yes.
And it's amazing, Watson. I think anybody who has a really busy lifestyle probably understands this is, and you're not like overly social, as I can go sit in a boat for 8 hours staring at just the scenery up in Ketchikan and not say a word.
Yes.
Or I can
Yes.
go up with a friend and we can say a half dozen words and have the best conversation of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a time for me to decompress, to kind of put things into perspective about what's really important, and really kind of live under the magnificence of what I think the Lord's created for us, because too much we get caught up in the busyness of whatever it is we're doing, home life, work, trying to balance things. I think everybody needs that kind of an opportunity. So, and then the side benefits, last year I was able to go up and together with a couple of friends, and we're able to bring in like a 73-pound halibut,
Wow.
which was like a highlight of the trip.
Did you have to shoot it? Did you have to shoot it when you got on?
No, actually, actually what we do is we harpoon it.
Okay.
Because they are very large. In fact, he was probably as almost as long as the boat. Harpoon them, and then you got to club them before you bring them in.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Because
yeah.
you don't want a live halibut that big inside of a boat. Because
yeah.
I've heard stories about them actually breaking legs or creating
yeah.
problems like that. But no, I'm getting ready to go back up in the middle of August again. So I'm looking forward to that time away.
That's awesome. I went halibut fishing and salmon fishing to Alaska. My mother-in-law bought it for my father-in-law. My wife bought it for me. We went up to Alaska halibut and salmon fishing. So we went out on a boat to halibut fishing, and they had, you know, they had 410 shotguns, right? Two 410 shotguns on board. And so I took a picture of it, sent it to the family group chat. My wife was like, shotguns? I'm like, hun, these are literally killer pancakes that we're putting on board. These things will kill you. Now, the ones we caught, I mean, no 73 pounds. They have a weird, I forgot the in Alaska, one can be over, it's a gambling system. So one can be over a certain height, but the other one, if you catch it, that's it. And you can only catch another one. There's something to do with the length requirements on it, but it was incredible fishing. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. It was one of the fishing trips where they ram the boat into the forklift offshore. It was extremely dangerous, I think. But I mean, I'm here, so I lived through it. But yeah, halibut fishing was fun. Salmon fishing was great. But to your point, your original point. That's why I deer hunt. I maybe got five deer in my life. I don't care. Mm-hmm. 4 hours of silence. That is, that's the part for me. I'll watch other nature happen around me. You know, it's just beautiful just to, and it's like police work. It's 99% nothing's happening and 1%. Oh, here we go. You know?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, but the peace and quiet is just, and then getting back to everything, the mental health aspects of it is fantastic. You're just out there just enjoying life. You're not inside. You're not in front of computer monitors. You know, you're just doing what you're supposed to do, you know? So that's great. Awesome. Awesome. Jim, And I know I got to bring this up. So no relation to the Major League Baseball player, Rob Dibble, correct?
You know, it's so funny because I was stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and living in Nashville when he was actually pitching for the Nashville Blues. I actually got to meet him, and I used to tease everybody. When they'd ask me, any relation to Rob Dibble? And I says, yeah, he's my brother. He said, really? It's like, no, not really. He's just a very gifted pitcher. But yeah, I thought it was funny that we were both in Nashville at the same time.
Yeah.
But I did get a chance to meet him. But yeah, very nice guy. No, not related.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, I know. First time I met you, I was like, it's Jim Dibble. It's Jim Dibble, not Rob Dibble. Yeah, so that's funny stuff there. All right, Jim, do you have anything to close us out with before we end this great episode?
No, I would just say the same thing I typically will end with when I'm talking to people who are interested in IACES. It's like, and it's really kind of like my call to action for people. Listen, many, many years ago, people invested in me. I've been a product of investment by other people in who I am. And hopefully I've made some positive changes during my tenure, not only with IACES, but as a, you know, law enforcement official, no matter what I do. We need to look for ways to try to give back not only to our local community, but to make a difference in the world. So I guess my challenge, my call to arms, if you will, for IACES people who are interested in the field is, listen, somebody invested in you. It's time. Make sure you invest in somebody else.
Yes.
To make a positive change in this world, because I know that if we don't do it, little is going to change. But it's been a privilege for me, quite frankly, to be involved with IASIS for all these years. The number of people, wonderful people I've had an opportunity to meet and call my friend, colleagues, is amazing. So and the other thing, too, is on the work side, it's like I'm always a phone call away. If anybody needs to talk, either forensics or if they need to talk Cellebrite for now until I retire again, my line's always open. And like you was, I appreciate what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing, because it illuminates so much about our job that if it wasn't for people like you, others would not know anything about us. And I think that's what makes us truly different is relationships, what propels us. So yeah, thanks for all you're doing as well.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. I try to bring, I like you, digital forensics isn't as sexy as we think it is. So I try to bring a human element into every episode, obviously, and every guest I have. I try to break it down to where it's not all zeros. It's not all zeros and ones. And this is great swag you guys gave out at conferences. I think I had to take a screenshot. It says operator when I converted it, but that's the Cellebrite shirt. But it's not all zeros and ones. There's always a human behind everything, and I like to bring humanity to what it is we do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, because that's the most important part, you know. And I know IASIS does that with the human, you know, humans of IASIS, where they spotlight everybody, you know. They're, and everybody's always fishing, everybody, you know taking pictures of birds and stuff like that. That's pretty much what my portion of that was. But Jim, listen, I appreciate those kind words. I really do. And we'll be seeing you hopefully sooner than later. All right.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Jim Dibble. Okay. IASIS Podcast. I'm your host, Ferran Wozniak. Have a great night, great day, great morning, whenever you're watching this. Take care.